Hello there, this is Terry Denise, a Lansing Community College student and your host of Ripper, an LCC Connect podcast where I interview others and ask about their unique efforts and connections in, around, and beyond the community of Michigan's capital city. Well, hello. Hello, hello, hello. I hope you are well. How is your summer going? This latent bit into the fall. This weird time where it gets super hot all of a sudden up here in the Michiganders. It gets super weird, and then people swear they start seeing orbs and things like that. Okay, I'm not getting into it too much, Rose Lake. I'm not getting too much into it today. I, though, believe we have the Perseids going on very soon, very now, very around the August area of things. And you can still see a lot of the shooting or falling, what we perceive as falling. They're just moving at a rate that we can, our eyes are catching it. So it looks like everything's falling or moving in a crazy way. I love that. I love the stars. I love astronomy. I love the fact that in certain portions of Michigan, as if you are out far enough without so much light pollution, you can actually see Aurora Borealis, or also known as what was going to be the name of a child that I was going to have. also known as the Northern Lights. Did you guys know Aurora was the name of, was it Cinderella? That's her real name, Aurora. Anyway, yeah, you can totally see all of these spectacular astronomical things going on in the skies. I often catch what we perceive as shooting stars. I will just literally be walking across a parking lot, and then I'm just looking up and just, you know, gazing. If you ever go out on long walks like I do, whether it's just to get your exercise in or, you know, it's a good season to be able to not have to worry about slipping on ice and everything like that. Okay, let me backtrack here for a second. I am from a generation, I'm not going to date myself, I'm certainly not going to give my age out, but I am of a particular time where it was absolutely 100,000,000,000% completely normal to just go outside and walk around and then do like what you perceive as doing nothing. I'm not doing anything. And it's like, no, you have walked near many creeks, you've walked in the woods, you've walked in the forest, you like stop and looked at a bunch of sticks, and you're like, this is the best stick. No, that's the best stick. And you're like, I'm just going to carry around this stick for a while. And then you throw it. You do so many things. But really, you know, you're just like, no, I'm not doing anything. What you're really doing is just letting your mind actually function in a different way that it needs to. You need to get to a point in your brain where it's not following a precise schedule of some sort. If you have like a trajectory or some kind of pathway that you take on long walks or something like that, or short walks even, your brain uses that map, you know, it's just like on autopilot, and you just, you feel like you're not doing anything because you're just not concentrating so hard on things. That's a great area to go start off with. When you're not concentrating on things, that's usually when I start seeing things in the sky, like shooting stars, satellites, our favorite things that we like to talk about online on like Nextdoor and everything, about the helicopters here in the Midwest. We love talking about the helicopters. Did anybody feel those large helicopters, the big helicopters? Man, oh man, it was so low. Actually, we did have a helicopter circling around here on campus yesterday. It was pretty military grade, definitely. It was a very large machine, and it was really low to the point where even the squirrel that was like gathering around the picnic table, who was like, do you have any more food for me though? And I was like, I'm searching. I thought I had another granola bar, but I don't. And it sat around me for a while. The other guy shooed it away, but I had already pointed out something that had already dropped from my trail mix. Anyway, this thing was flying really low yesterday. It was like I could see inside of the hatch, I guess, the back part. I don't know what you call, if it's a call to hatch or just the entrance or exit way, but it's on the back of the helicopter. This thing is like super long. You can definitely fit machines in there, like if you're taking, I don't know, 50 SUVs or something. I'm pretty sure 50 SUVs could fit in there. So like maybe 5 Hummers then. Stretch Hummers. No, but seriously, these are huge helicopters just like flying low. But as we know around here, you know, on top of agricultural area and automobile industry, industrious area, we have a lot of schools. So there's a lot of also military areas around here. We've got, you know, like local FBI offices and all this kind of stuff because we are also the capital city of Michigan. We are a mainstay for a lot of activity going on. So like when people are always chirping online on their little chirp apps and everything like that about like low flying vehicles, and it's like, yeah, probably because of all the hospitals and the fact that you live in an actual capital city, that's pretty normal, especially one that borders a different country. It's so I often wonder if it's just many people that have just moved to Michigan or something like that, or have just never lived long enough, or I don't know. Maybe it's just people that like that's all they have for their day. They need to take some walks because your brain starts like removing things like that. It starts like, you know, going like, you know, this is a repetitive thing your brain is tracing over and over again and that you keep bringing up in conversations. Like, what's going on? You need something else to do. You need to move on, move through it. And that is a fantastic way to go through life too. It's great, great things to come back to. It's just to, if something's not working for you, you should move on from it. It takes a minute to realize things are not necessarily the best for you or others. But everybody is so, you know, a lot of people are very, very in our heads and sometimes our hearts or souls, if you still have any of that left. Just kidding. Not really. But if you are so attached to something that you're afraid of letting go because it does take a minute to realize perhaps we should move on from this moment onto something else, into a different realm of thinking. That's what those walks do personally for me. It's you are literally moving on. Those are very fascinating things to do to help your brain get into a different mode and state of being because it helps reflect and deflect some energies that have been stagnant for a while. So just like the low-flying helicopters, that's kind of what's going on in your head sometimes. You've got some low-flying bits of information that are just, they're not really doing anything. They're not there, like people aren't jumping out of them and there's not parachuting going on or anything like that. Unless there's very strange activities going on. That's not what's going on. Those people are practicing and they are definitely, if anything, looking out for people below them. A lot of people, we've got, you know, like ROTC, Army, military stations and everything like that around. So they need to know how to actually fly around cities, and that's part of their training. So beyond a certain part of training, if you're getting to the point where you are flying over cities and whatnot, then you have passed a lot of tests that you needed to take. So that too with a lot of the hospital vehicles that we see flying around our heads and everything like that, it's like, well, we do have a lot of hospitals around us, and many times because we are in a very hyperactive, free-to-highway state, we have a lot of things that sometimes there's things that happen where a lot of people need airlifting. So yeah, you're gonna see low-hanging machines in the sky sometimes. We also have an airport the capital city airport. So I just find it very interesting that people concentrate on these things. And it's like, it's very low hanging ideas and thoughts that you have going on. Like, why don't you just go outside and try to guess, you know, you could start making a whole mission about it to like, just like, why don't you make it into a hobby or an activity to see what kind of vehicle it is, instead of like just mentioning, yeah, did anybody like hear the helicopters? And it's like, yes, dude, which one actually? Because, I mean, how many? Like, there's a lot. You got to move on from it. Like, make an activity. Like, get, like, a checklist. Or, like, I don't know, like, make your own bingo square for the kinds of different vehicles that you see in the sky are flying, hovering machines. When you get to a particular square that says, I don't know, something like a hover boat or maybe a UFO, but it's got to be a UFO for you, because that just still means unidentified flying object, I believe. So yeah, low hanging thought arenas of areas that you keep coming back to, and it's just like you haven't quite made anything of what you're thinking about. So those times when you just go out and don't think about anything, and that's what you think you're doing. You think you're not thinking about anything, but your brain is like shooting off when you're giving it a rest. Because honestly, when you're concentrating on getting to school, work, to getting your kids to class, well, because it's summer, so summer school class or whatever, or just like getting up for your day, and having your trajectories that are your goals that are set that you're trying to push through. You've got your list of to-do things. You need to get into your game. If you're gaming and everything like that, and you're like, well, okay, how much I need to fix my armor or something like that, or I need to like get back into this layer area and check out my skill sets and everything like that. Like, I need to push the momentum here. I need to, what can I do to try to get to a better place in this state of things, in this part of the game and everything like that? Like, I want to, and how many, and that's depending on how many games you've already started. So like some games you're going through and you're just like, I want to see how many things I can collect. I want to see the highest score I can get through just running through and see how long it'll take me if I just don't stop to collect anything. You know, all those kinds of things. So you'll have like 10 games going at once. But you'll have your main one, your like main focused game where you're like putting all of your focus into. You've got your skins on a particular way. You've got certain things that you actually did read up on, and you're like, no, I don't want to know the rest of what this is. I just need to know exactly if there's some extra bits here that I need to watch out for, or if, like, is there like five different shields that I need to get as opposed to just the two? You know, like, are there a certain number of life statuses that I can get? Can I, like, multiply those, you know, just things like that. Back in the day, we used to have the Nintendo Power books and everything like that. That would, all those like gaming books and magazines and catalogs and everything like that, that you could read, and it would give you tips and advice and everything like that. And people would share like their different kind of coding things that they received and figured out and everything like that. I remember playing Aladdin and figuring out certain things and then going over to another person's house, and they're like massive mini moons beyond my reach. And I'm like, how did you get here? And they tell you just like this little piece of information. You're like, from there on, it's just the whole teach a person a fish, and they'll fish for as long as they can stand to fish until the bear comes in and grabs the fish from you and you go screaming away. No, seriously though, like, it's just those little bits of information that helps people like get into a different state of being and stop, you know, it helps to like generate that low flying around thought dumb you might have going on, and actually like expand your abilities, expand your mileage up. It can help expand how far you go with those little thoughts and everything like that. And people can make games out of this stuff, you know? That's how those, there's those like zombie games, the little the tabletop games that came out of just somebody going like, how would you get out of a zombie apocalypse if it were in this neighborhood? And they built like those little tabletop games where you have like neighborhoods built up in a particular way, and like hospitals are in there, and it's just like, you know, playing your rounds and everything like that. And it's like, well, if I go this way, if I go that way, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. And all that came from was just people being obsessed with zombie movies, basically, and zombie comics. That kind of way of thinking is critical. It's critical thinking. It's critical thought. It's trying to figure out different ways on how to perceive things. And it's really great. It's great exercise for all ages. It helps your brain keep moving, which it needs to do. I mean, your brain is not going to stop until, and sometimes, well, if you want to get, I'm going to get morbid here, but sometimes after your body ceases to stop doing things, your brain is still going. It's still doing things. It's still processing information until it actually stops, until you're literally brain dead, until your brain stops firing off on the synapses and whatnot, and stops with the electrodes being there in that particular way and being used in that particular way, you still got to keep your brain moving. And to help power that through and to help out with, like, oh, I don't know, combating certain things like dementia and Alzheimer's and everything like that, even loneliness at any age, those are the things that help people get through. It's not just like, I can't get up, I can't get through this, I can't do this, I can't do that. It's just the fact that, like, you're not allowing, or one's not allowing their brain to be able to focus on a different level of their own personality or of their own abilities to reach beyond what they've been flying low-levelly. That's not a word, but it is today. Time, sometimes you got to get yourself out of those low levels, the low level thoughts, the low level like brooding and everything like that. And it's fine. It's actually a good thing to notice when you are actually in those states of thought, because how are you going to recognize that you need to get out of it? You need to like know that you're not doing too well, that you're not feeling the best, that the thoughts that you're having are just like instantly negative, that you're just rounding the lake in the sense of the same thought over and over again, and you get lodged in there and you can't make your way out. It's not a good place to be. It's a good place to get out of. So that's why I suggest, you know, going out, even to down, even like in your own unit, wherever you are, if there's like a patch of land or something that you can just look at the blaze of grass, just look at the things around you and see how things are growing. And if you just go like, yeah, like this is so boring. Like, why is this patch of grass so boring? It's like, I don't know. Why don't you go plant a couple of seeds and see if anything happens? Probably won't be so boring anymore. Just make sure nobody's like, make sure you let that you're not mowing over that area or anything like that. You know, literally the dollar store, which is not even a dollar store anymore. It's expanded beyond a dollar now. Inflation. A dollar store has like seeds that you can get. You can just practice with those, and it's just wildflower seeds and everything like that. Just throw them out in the yard. Throw them out there. Throw them in there. Just make sure you put them well enough into the dirt and everything like that so that the birds aren't getting to them. But yeah, you can like easily get fertilizer. It's pretty good stuff. I mean, we're an agricultural area in our part of the world and this part of the country, in fact. So it's not very difficult to go out and grab some stuff. Even planting is one of those things. Sowing, seeding, and reaping and everything like that, harvesting and whatnot, is just one of those critical things. It's a critical thought exercise. It's one of those things that allows yourself to breathe. It allows yourself to get outside and just get into the earth. You need to ground yourself sometimes. You need to be out in the earth. That is the thing that is literally supporting everybody right now. So sometimes it's good to go out and understand that, oh, hey, you can actually support the earth itself by getting those nutrients and toiling some nutrients back into the soil itself. It needs that sometimes. It needs to get things rolling, some dirt out and some good dirt in, or some good topsoil in and everything like that. And actually, because we've had such a terribly sunny, hot summer, it is turning some grass, some patches of the grass, pretty brown. Not a pretty brown, but pretty brown. But some may say it's a pretty brown. I guess it's all in your perspective. But eventually the rain will fall and you'll see some new grass grow, and that's great. But sometimes what helps with that is going out and toiling the soil and just making sure that you have the, you know, if you need permission to do that, just make sure you get that permission to do so, because you, sometimes you don't know if it's somebody else's land and property. But other than that, yeah, just making things spectacular is a great benefit for not only yourself, but it's a benefit for nature itself, all the bees and bugs. If you don't mind, the bunnies and deer really appreciate really nice flowers that get set out and everything like that. And that does help with the whole outlook of the way that everything is perceived around you. You can uplift your entire brain with just like looking at different kinds of things that grow out of the earth, different projections that come naturally. The in bloom of things. This was a thought that was flying over my head earlier today. I was thinking about, you know, I was actually kind of irked about something. I was a little irked. So I had to get my brain moving, and I was like, well, what's making me feel this way? So I do a lot of different kinds of things, performance-wise and everything like that. I've been singing and performing since I was a child, around locally, actually. When I was in high school, I was in one of the chorals that you have to actually audition for. And usually people do 1 year of that, but I was able to get in for 2 years. So I had auditioned, and they had me in for 2 years. Actually, we're called the East Lansing L Singers, the EL Singers, where you go to state competitions and things like that. So I sang in church. I was in the passion plays. You can actually probably, if you are savvy enough, you can probably find video of me as a child performer during the passion plays and our Christmas or our holiday season plays and everything like that at particular area churches that I was in. And moving on from that, I got really into a lot of different kinds of music when I was growing up. So I was very, very much enamored with a lot of punk, a lot of punkabilly and things like that, a lot of different kinds of metal, and of course, like hip hop and rap and everything like that. But I was really into metal, lots of metal. I loved like Soundgarden growing up and Sabbath and everything like that. So much so that and a lot of electronic music too. Good D&B, electronic and jungle. Anyway, so at some point in time, I've started to go out for bands, or like people would mention my name and like, hey, you should go and see if you can audition for this band. So I was like a backup singer for a Pink Floyd tribute band and everything like that quite early on, and then got into many different kinds of bands and everything like that. Anyway, one of the things that I was thinking about today was that people saying this like, oh, you're a late bloomer kind of a thing. And I'm just like, that is very irksome. Because it made me think about the fact that like one might not be, you just might not have known or noticed the plumage. You might not have noticed the blooms coming off of a person because you weren't paying attention. For some, I may have been stomping all over the the flower that was blooming, or the plants that were blooming there. So you didn't even get a chance to like see how well this thing was blooming. But so many of us like bloom a lot, and it's like we're not just annuals. We are like, it's everyday blooming. So, like, with that, with the planting and the toiling and going into the soil and everything like that, I'd say, like, take that perspective upon yourself, because it gets kind of bothersome when people are saying, like, oh, you just got into this? And you're like, no, I've been doing this for, like, decades, but nobody's noticed, because I don't know why. Maybe because people have been trying to shade you or trying to, you know, sometimes you just, much like getting your body to move, sometimes you just need to get other bodies to move out of the way. And I don't mean keep them in the closet or under under your house, like the Telltale Heart or anything like that. No, no, no. What I mean is just like sometimes you just need to either remove yourself, like pollinate in other areas. You can pollinate in many, many other areas and find your own way to bloom somewhere else, because you'll figure out that you can bloom in so many different ways that you never even realized you could before. So with that, I would love to get back to the helicopters and everything like that. If you've got those low-flying thoughts, get yourself out there and just, like, once you notice that they're flying and everything like that, like, just start looking at a tree and go, like, oh, what's going on? Wait a minute, are those cicadas that I hear that David Letterman would talk about all the time in the summer? Like, go out there and just listen to them for a while, you know, like chitter chatter with the local chipmunk or red squirrel, or get them out of your trash or whatever. Just, you know, hang out for a bit. Like, go take a night walk. The sunset dusk walk are so, the sun has been amazing. That fluorescent orange. Oh my goodness. Please check it out if you can, and start making your own blooms, you know, start blooming yourself out there. You'll feel a lot better, and you might find it necessary. So you'll have something else to talk about whenever you go online every once in a while. All right. Stay tuned for Ripper coming back. And thank you for joining Ripper. And I hope you have a wonderful day. Thanks for tuning in to Ripper. You can find more about this and other LCC Connect podcasts at lccconnect.com.
This is LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College, and when assistance is needed, tutoring is available to all students. To find out more about tutoring services, visit lcc.edu/tutoring.
Hi, I'm Greg Ladig, and I host a show called Stars on Sports with Assistant Athletic Director Stephen Cutter here on LCC Connect. It's all about Lansing Community College Athletic Department. You can always find out more about Stars on Sports and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Woot, woot.
And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Michigan residents age 25 or older may qualify for Michigan Reconnect, a program providing free or reduced tuition to students who have not earned a prior college degree. Reconnect students are responsible for books and fees. Visit lcc.edu/reconnect for more information.
LCC. Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Hey, I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And I think we may have been educational in part one. I don't know if we were very entertaining or not.
We're going to spice it up.
We're going to. Well, this part is on family therapy. The first part was on family. So if you've missed the first part, go back and listen to it. As a general introduction just to a lot of ideas. Maybe it sparks some ideas for you as the listener. But I wanted to tell a story at the top of this. When I first became a therapist, I was very influenced by family therapy. And I liked the way...
Were you in family therapy?
No. No. I was not in any therapy at that point. But I was interested in therapy. I wanted to be a therapist. And I liked the way the family therapist wrote about the human condition. It just seemed a lot more affirming. It was not focused on pathology. It was more along the lines of systemic thinking and that kind of thing, systems thinking. And so that's what I really focused on.
Maybe more practical, too.
More practical. Some of it problem solving. But when I started to do therapy, I was terrible at it. I was just not good. I could do individual okay. But family therapy, you really have to be like a combination matador, traffic cop. You know, you have to be.
Well, there's
able
a special,
to,
I mean, and it's not, but license LMFT, right?
Yeah,
marriage and
that.
Family therapist. So it's a specific training modality.
Yeah, that came about after I'd already gotten MSW. But I was still doing it. And I heard about a different level of training that was occurring in Ann Arbor with family therapy associates. And so Bennett Wolper and Zona Shiner ran that company, and they were bringing in an expert. The medical director from the Philadelphia Child Guidance Clinic was coming in and doing live supervision with therapists, like a room full of therapists.
Oh, wow.
And there was another room full of therapists that were watching that.
Oh, my God.
So I went for 1 year, and I sat in the audience room. There were like almost 20 of us in that room watching these people do family therapy one weekend out of the month for a period of 8 months out of the year. So that was pretty intensive. But the next year I said, okay, I want to be in that room. I want to be in the room where I'm getting live supervision. And there were a dozen therapists in that room. And so we alternated every weekend. There would be six of us that would be doing it. So basically every other month. So you ended up presenting about four different times. You brought families in. It got videotaped. I still have
the
videotapes.
Who are the families? Are these like...
They're families that were in your own...
You would bring the clients with you?
Yeah. And the pitch was... You know, I'm working with you. I think here's a chance to see someone who's a national expert. And I'll be getting some consulting for myself, and it'll aid my own training. But you'll also get the advantage of seeing someone who is like kind of at the top of the game. So
was it helpful? I'm thinking it was.
It was way helpful.
Yeah.
It was so helpful. And I felt after doing that, and I did a third year too. After that, I felt like I'm a competent therapist. I feel like I know what I'm doing now. And it was a way of being with people, and it was also a way of conceptualizing people. And the model that he worked with, Charles Fishman was the guy who did this, and he co-wrote a book. Do you know the name Salvador Minuchin? He was a South American guy. He was very, very influential in the whole family therapy business. But structural family therapy was the idea that... it's the structure of the family itself that you work with. You affirm the individual, but you challenge the system. And the idea, the kind of systems that there was an enmeshed system where there's like no boundaries inside the family. Like everyone's merged. Like there's, you know, there's no difference between the parents and the kids.
That was not my family.
Yeah, we were very differentiated. Yeah, very and that's the challenge is to help people differentiate and to have their own voices and to
meshed more. We needed more mesh.
The opposite of that is the disengaged family.
Oh, okay.
So the disengaged family is a family where they're basically kind of strangers to each other. That there is not a lot of connection. There's not a lot of engagement. And that's the challenge with that. You know, have you guys thought about having a dinner together a couple times a week, for instance? Or do you have a game night? What would that be like if you had a game night? Let's play a game here together. You know, so that they would have a different experience of each other. And that would be true. So, for instance, like you have a depressed parent, for instance, and who's really disengaged to pull them in and that would be a way to engage them. But there were also families that where there was a fair amount of addiction. There was chaotic families.
That is, yeah.
And then there was also abusive families. So those were the main kinds of family issues that we would see. And
what's a chaotic family like? I mean, it was, is that the addiction? And
it could be addiction. Kind of a subset? It could be addiction. It could be psychosis. Mm. It could be someone who's just acting out a lot. And it could be violence. It could be, and it could be a chaotic out of the family's own poverty, for instance, or circumstances that was beyond their control. So
arrest, some sort of legal situation.
Yeah, yeah. And so when I first got into the field, I was doing a lot of family therapy. I was back in the 80s and into the early 90s. In fact, I was told by the head of one of the HMOs, they said, you're seeing 80% of the families in this community.
Wow.
And it was really, it was interesting work. It was also hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And
I picture it being so hard.
Yeah.
So hard. I mean, you're not just working with one person. You're working with, like, I mean, how big would you see five people at a time? Six, two,
five,
four?
All of those.
Yeah.
So sometimes it might be a single parent with a single child, for instance. But the idea was to have everybody in the family in the room at the same time.
And what about, like, mediating between, like, how would this session go? Would it be on a certain topic, or would you lead it, or would it be like, what do you guys want to talk about today? Or I'm sure it was different based on.
It would be a check-in with every member of the family.
Okay, so
every family member has a voice. You know, what's going on for you? What's going on for you? What's going on for you? How can I help you today? So
we went to family therapy. So,
oh,
you
this
know.
Is great. All right, okay, let's get down to it.
my father's a psychiatrist. So
yeah.
So he was exposed. I think it takes a certain family to do family therapy, mm-hmm. you know, because you kind of have to have everybody on board, mom, dad, or however many people are in the family. I was probably 10, like 11, something yeah. like that. And so it was my mom and my dad who had been, I think, in couples therapy on and off for however long. And so I remember there's a male and a female, like therapists. There were okay. two therapists. So okay. one was a woman, one was a man.
Was this in this area?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember where it was.
Was I one of them?
Maybe you were. Oh, my gosh. I'll have to ask my mom if she can remember who these people were.
Yeah.
So it was awkward. You know, I yeah. remember that. It's very awkward.
Sure.
So, you know, everybody's sitting and kind of looking at each other. And it's just a very different setting or environment than, you know, you're in normally as a family. And I have a half-brother who is my dad's child from a previous marriage who's like 11 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just layers of our family story that, you know, kind of bubble and seethe, and sometimes there's conflict. But I remember my brother being there, and he's very stoic. He is not touchy-feely. He does not want to talk about his feelings.
This
is my oldest brother.
Right. Okay.
So it was just like, he was like deterred. I just remember seeing his face. He was like not gonna participate, and then he did at some point. He became very emotional. Like, you scratch the surface, and he was, you know,
oh,
there was
wow.
a lot there. It was just very. It wasn't helpful for me, I would say. I mean, other than, you know, our family was committed to trying to work on stuff. You know, that mm-hmm. that I think in retrospect was a really positive thing. I remember there was another incident. So we had this dog. We always had dogs. My dad was a hunter, so he had hunting dogs that he never trained, so they would end up being these crazy dogs. But one of them was a German Shorthair Pointer, and I was in charge of walking him. And one day he got away from me, and he got hit by a car, and he Ooh. Died.
Ooh.
And I was both okay with that because he was a crazy dog, and I hated taking him out. I love dogs. I would, you know, never. This was a very, you know, Freud, like an id type of thing. But I was also felt very guilty and horrible and awful, and felt like everybody, you know, blamed me. And that came up, and I just was like, just all this, I like cried so hard, and, you
oh,
know,
wow.
and I think everybody, you know, because I.
Did they reassure you?
No, I don't remember that. Maybe. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I, you know, my parents had a lot of issues. I mean, they ended up separating and becoming divorced. So a lot of it was was their stuff that was like, you know, affecting the larger family dynamic. And so it was like stuff that I already knew or didn't really have a lot to do with me. And, you know, I was gay and I don't remember if I wasn't out at that point. So I wasn't really interested in divulging all of my secrets and, you know, kind of. Yeah, so it was just awkward for me. It was really awkward.
Yeah.
That's what I remember is awkward.
That's interesting. I'm not going to go into the same degree of detail as you did, but our family did, we were involved in a couple of interventions. So, you know, trying to get somebody into treatment.
Was it you?
It was not me. I'm not going to identify. Although it would be totally safe to do it because I don't think no one in my family ever listens to these. So as far as I know, but I would rather not, that's not mine to divulge. But we did have that experience. And it was interesting to me because at the time I was doing therapy and the idea of doing an intervention to try to help someone else in the family. Like I said, it was on the one hand, it was interesting to me. Ultimately, I was going to say ultimately it didn't work. I think it worked to the extent of like, you know, when you're trying to help someone in your family and you feel like, okay, now I've done everything I know how to do. I feel like I can let go of this now. I don't have to push it anymore. This is just going to be the way it is.
That's so interesting because I don't see myself as the one to help people in my family. I mean, in certain ways, yes. Like, I take my mom to the hospital or to doctor's appointments. I like to be involved. You know, I'm a nurse. I like to sort of keep tabs on that. But like if somebody needs, you know, like some type of professional service, like I just don't conceive of, I just don't think that I would be helpful for them. You know, I just don't. In my, like, the way that I see our family is like, you need help from outside this family. Like, you need somebody else.
Yeah. Well, that's true. A lot of times you really have to. I think I'm identified as the helper in my family. Mm. So I think I've mentioned to you, like, I do a family Zoom meeting every week.
Yeah. Once a week you were talking about it.
With my sisters who are 8 and 10 years older than I am. So they're elderly. I'm old, but they're elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And
do they like it when you call them elderly?
Yeah, they love it. Well, they talk about it all the time. That's mainly what they talk about. And what's interesting, one thing that shifted for me is that we used to do this thing. It was kind of corny, but we did roses and thorns. So we would be talking about like, okay, what happened this week that was bad? What did you like about this week? And then I realized, like, Jesus, I'm doing therapy with my siblings.
Mm-hmm,
And so now it's funny because my daughter gave me a present that was called Grandpa, Tell Us Your Memories. And it's like every day of the year, there's a question about, do you remember raking leaves? Tell us a memory about that.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember what did you dress up for in Halloween? You know, all those kinds of things. And so now that's what we do. I ask them those questions and they love it. And it's really, you know, it's really a kind of a normal kind of like, let's not dig into your issues. Let's just talk about memories. Mm-hmm. What we have in common is our childhoods. And so that's what we talk about and it goes a lot better.
Mm.
And I'm not doing the codependent. Let me treat you.
Well, I was thinking like in COVID, you know, I did you start doing the Zoom during COVID?
Yes.
Cause we were all disconnected and we did something similar just once or twice cause we're so inconsistent. But, but yeah, I think a lot of people did that. Well, I mean, during COVID, we were all around our primary people lot. So
if I don't do it, they will ask me to do it. They'll text me on Sunday mornings. Are we doing Zoom today? What time can we do Zoom?
That's
and it's
nice.
It's an hour out of a Sunday. It's all right. And it is a way to stay connected to them, especially these days.
Yeah. So I have, I guess, been trying to, set up some traditions like that, you know? So I have three brothers and my dad is dead. He died. And my mom is still alive. So all three of my brothers have kids. So we were also a military family growing up. So we moved around a lot. And my mom is from like a military family. So that's kind of a little bit different. I mean, you know, you're so mobile that you don't really connect with. Well, you just are not in any place for long. And frequently you're very far away from your own family. So I didn't meet my dad's parents until I was well into elementary school. Like, I just didn't even meet them until I was probably like second grade is when I met them. At least I remember meeting them. My aunt died. This is my mom's sister. And part of what we talked about in her funeral and memorial and things was how important family traditions were to her, because she grew up in military where there was none of that. Mm-hmm. So she didn't want to be in the military. She didn't want to marry somebody in the military. She was very interested in establishing traditions. And that really struck me, because we have some things, but so anyway, I'm trying to think of ways to connect and create that kind of foundational stuff with with my brother's kids, because the kids love that sort of, you know, anything. They want to look at photo albums. They want to hear stories. Well, they want to know this. They want to know that.
Do you remember that as a kid? If your parents got together with people, that you would be like an agent that would be sitting on the outside listening intently, like what are they talking about now? Especially listening for, like, if they started talking about you, it's like,
Absolutely. And photo albums at that point, it was like you would get out this, and my mom made these really amazing photo albums. And so it would just look at pictures of my parents when they got married, and us when we were living in Hawaii, we lived in Germany, you know, these memories that are part of the family memory. Like, I don't remember living in Germany, but I know the pictures, and I know the stories and things.
Well, being involved in your own family's drama as opposed to their trauma, because you're going to be involved in both, but the drama of what brought them there, you know, I think, you know, when I went to Ireland a few years ago and had an understanding, not just of where my family came from, but the ship they came over on, and was able to stand on that dock in Dublin where they left. And I knew that my great-great-great-grandfather and grandmother left as teenagers from different parts of Ireland. They didn't know each other before they got on that ship, and they came over to America. And just to think about those kids who, in the 1850s, as a result of the potato blight, were starving to death and had to go to a whole different country. And just the idea of that. I mean, that to me, it was like one of the most spiritual moments of my life, standing at that dock and looking down the river and saying, thank you. Thank you for all the hardships you endured. We made it. We're here. I'm back. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, just, we all come from some kind of a tradition of survivors. that everybody to get us here, when you think about the odds of you as a specific individual, the odds of you being here are so infinitesimally tiny, and yet here we are. So a lot of things had to happen. But anyway, so
when you're doing family therapy, what are the goals? I mean, is there kind of like a general outcome goal?
It's their goal. And for one thing, I rarely do family therapy anymore. And part of it is just by personal choice. I feel like I did that for a long time. And these days, it's rare that people come and say, I want family therapy. Usually they want an individual thing to happen for them. I think the perspective shifted a little bit. The idea of being existing in a community has shifted more to individual, a kind of an individual dynamic and an individual narrative of, like, my issues are my own. You know, they don't belong to the bigger. But when I did family therapy a lot, it was like, what do you guys want to see happen? And the main thing I wanted to have happen is for them to have a different experience of each other inside the context of their family. So when you described, like, okay, my older brother was very stoic, and then we saw him vulnerable, and we saw him crying.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a different experience. You were keeping things inside. You were crying. They got a chance to extend comfort to you. You weren't shamed about that. But
you wanted to see the human drama?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
A voyeur.
Sometimes it's very emotive. Sometimes it was pretty. It could be dramatic. Sometimes it was kind of mundane. So, I mean, it wasn't always, you know, psychodrama every there were weird things, like, you know how they do the empty chair, you know, talk to your dad as if he's in this chair. Like, talk to your dad, he's in the chair. he's really right there. Go ahead and do that. And also you could do something without words. It was called family sculpting. Everybody in the family stand up, get in a circle. Okay, I want you to say, you just said it feels like your dad is pushing you down. Can you arrange yourselves in a way that your dad is pushing you down? Is that what it feels like? And sometimes just enacting it like that, like human statues, like no words, just make it happen. Mm. Something would emerge out of that. There's another example I've got. When I used to do a lot of trainings, you could get people in a big circle and get them to reach into the middle of the circle and take two hands, but they couldn't be the same person's hands. They had to be two different hands, and they had to cross hands. So basically what you had was a human knot. And there would be two big groups of people that were doing that. And one group of people say, figure it out, talk it out, decide how you're going to get unwound. You guys don't talk, just do it. The group that had to talk was like, you know, oh, you got to go under. No, I'm doing this. The group that didn't talk, they just flowed. They did it automatically. It happened organically. It was kind of miraculous to watch it, because they would do, you know, they'd be done in 10 seconds.
And the other group would be arguing about it.
They're the Tower of Babel, just everyone yelling like, no, do it this way. Don't do it that way.
I think a lot of times what happens in my practice is, you know, I don't see families, because I am, doing medication management. But with kids, you know, I mean, the parents have to consent to everything. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times with kids, you end up having the parents in there, and then, you know, the parents show up, and then maybe somebody else shows up, and, you know, it's hard. It's different. I mean, it's definitely different.
Definitely different.
And a lot of times I find, and I'm not a family therapist, so I make that very clear, but people have things that they want to say in a structured environment. But a lot of times people will, like, talk to me, basically saying things that they would want to say to another person that's in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, somehow just being in that environment is more comfortable for them. It's interesting. I'm thinking about, you know, a family. I'm seeing the daughter. She's 15. And so I usually see her with her mom. And then her dad came, and totally different family relationship, obviously, you know, lots more of tension, conflict between the two. And the mom was very much a mediator, and it was just a very different vantage point, different perspective, different dynamic in the room. And it was definitely instructive. And, you know, part of me is thinking, like, I'm not a family therapist. But, you know, I am committed to, you know, my clients. So if this is helpful, but I'm thinking we should have booked
we're going to wrap up in a minute here. But, yeah, certain things that happen with families that I would try to reinforce. One is creating a hierarchy in the family, if there wasn't a hierarchy. Mm. This happened a lot with oppositional defiant kids who were acting out a lot.
That's what they called me.
Yeah, I'd ask the family, like, who's in charge? And the kid would say, I am. You know, he's 12 years old. He'd say, I'm in charge. And, you know, for instance, you know,
I would have said, that asshole is.
How do we get the parents back in charge? Establishing boundaries that worked. Having boundaries that were loose enough that people could leave the family if they needed to and come back to the family. You know, those are kind of examples. Anyway, yeah, we could talk a lot more about this, but we're not going to. Hey, we got a surprise for our listeners.
What is it?
Our next episode will include Melissa.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have
a third M,
Mike, Melissa, and Morgan.
Yeah, you're still putting yourself at the end.
Well, I should be at the beginning, but, you know.
A Psychodelicious Conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health, or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is a psychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited. This is WLNZ, Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect Weekly, a radio program from Lansing Community College's podcast network, LCC Connect. To listen on demand, find us at lccconnect.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.